You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 109 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I am delighted this afternoon to be joined by Emily. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and talk about this journey.
Yeah, and talk about this very rare disease.
Yes, yes.
Thank you so much for coming on. Now, you have a son with Hirschsprung's, and I guess we're going to talk a little bit, possibly maybe less about the whole medical side of it and more a little bit about sort of maintaining healthy lifestyle and whatnot. I'm really fascinated to hear this story because, again, I feel like we've been speaking a little bit about, I hear all sides of the spectrum, and this is sort of potentially sort of the lower side of the spectrum, but we will see how we get on. Kind of up to you from where you want to begin the journey.
I'd love to start with, first of all, he has a twin sister, and they were born, no complications, no issues. And we did not realize that there was anything wrong for a couple months. I say that in the hospital, generally when babies are born, they generally poop right away. And he did not, and his sister did, and he did not. And the nurses and doctors kind of went, he probably has a meconium plug, right? Yeah. Like it's probably just plugged up. It happens, no big deal. So I think it was the day after they were born, maybe 24 hours or so after, a doctor had come in and had like manually kind of gotten the plug out, and he pooped, and they were like, okay, no big, you're fine, you're fine, take him home, no issues. So we did, and we having twins, it's a lot. You're very sleep deprived. You're kind of in this like haze of just getting through surviving those first few months with two babies. And so we kind of realized about a month old that we realized that there was this kind of cycle where, and it was easy for us because he had a twin sister, so there was a comparison where we could see that, she's pooping every day like infants normally do. And he was not. He would generally go 4 or 5 days. We'd kind of got into this cycle with him where we realized that he was going 3, 4, 5 days without pooping. And he would eventually poop. And then he would just be the happiest baby. He was just great, like smiley and happy. And but then we would get to day 3, 4, 5, and he would be absolutely miserable. His stomach would be distended and he would just be fussy. And, we tried all the things with, moving their legs to try and get, thinking it was gas and trying to, get the gas out. And, then we started to think, well, maybe he's colicky. And But then he would poop and he would be totally fine. So we kind of let it go because we're like, we didn't know anything about Hirschsprung's, didn't know anything about, and once again, with twins, we're so preoccupied with just surviving at that point that we didn't really have the mental capacity to do a whole bunch of looking into like what might be going on. And, it was just kind of trying to survive the day to day. So we just kind of dealt with it and didn't think all that much of it. I remember having conversations about it and my husband and I talking about it and going, it is kind of weird because again, his twin sister in comparison is pooping every day and he's not. Okay. So maybe it's just his, maybe that's just his body, like maybe that's just normal for him. We don't know, you know. And we didn't really think much about it till I think it was his 3-month checkup. We had a 3-month checkup for both of them. And we had just kind of mentioned it to the pediatrician and said, between the two, like there's this noticeable difference in when he's pooping and when she's pooping and kind of their normal cycles for that. And the pediatrician kind of like immediately all of a sudden said, hang on, like that's not normal for a 3-month-old to only be going every 4 or 5, you know, like days. Like that's not what it should be. So she immediately had us she wanted us to get into a GI specialist, and she was able to pull some strings and get us in very quickly to, you know, the GI specialist, especially at children's hospitals, usually can take a very long time to get in. She was able to pull some strings, and I think it was like a week later that we were able to get in and went and saw them. And I don't remember like the exact timeline, but saw them, and I think they might have mentioned Hirschsprung's kind of pretty early on. I don't remember for sure, but I know that they right away said, no, we need to do some more testing and figure out what's going on. So they had us scheduled. They scheduled us pretty quickly for a biopsy. My husband remembers like all the dates and the timeline better than I do. Cause like, once again, it kind of all blends together with at that point, 3 or 4 month old twins. But I know that they did the biopsy. And as soon as the biopsy came back, they said, no, he has Hirschsprung's, and explained to us what that is and why that explained his normal, like, bowel cycle and why he was only pooping every, you know, like why, because his, you know, his body literally can't get it out. And that's kind of a big shock when you're like, you know, in every other way he's like this, he's a totally normal happy baby until he gets to the point where it's uncomfortable and it hurts. And you know, as soon as they did the biopsy, they said, yeah, no, we need to schedule him for surgery. And I remember the GI specialist being really upset that the doctor in the hospital when they were born didn't catch it, especially because they did have to do that, you know, manual meconium plug, you know, thing. Because they were twins, because I had a C-section, I think we were in the hospital for like 3 days when they were born. And the GI specialist kind of said, how did they not notice that he hadn't pooped again? He should have gone again before you guys left the hospital. And that it was really, that just the GI specialist was kind of irritated that the doctor didn't catch that there was something going on, and that, you know, that we had been kind of living with this for 3 months, and that Leo had been living with it for 3 months without us realizing that there was something wrong. So they basically then immediately said, okay, we're going to get him in for surgery as soon as possible. We can't let this go. Like, we need to get him in as soon as possible. So ended up scheduling the surgery for the week before Christmas. So he was like 5 months old at that point. So he and I were in the hospital for about, I think it was about 5 days that we were in the hospital. So they did his surgery, went really, really well. They ended up resecting 7 inches of his bowel. And then they did the Botox shot to help with, you know, just to help loosen everything up. So, you know, he was young enough. He obviously doesn't remember that. He doesn't, you know, it was fairly traumatic for me because, you know, I'm in the hospital for 5 days and of course he couldn't, you know, after, because of what it is, he couldn't eat they wouldn't let him have anything to eat. And barely drink. I think he had an IV. So I think that's how he was getting fluids. You know, he couldn't eat anything. It was like the third day after surgery before they let him eat. And the poor kid was just, you know, he's 5 months old. Like he's old enough to be laying there with his head up, you know, propped up on his arms with his head up and looking at me and crying and miserable. Like I just remember it just being absolutely heartbreaking for me because there was nothing I could do. I just wanted to feed him so badly and I couldn't. They wouldn't let me, obviously. And I just remember that when the doctor did finally come in and cleared him to eat, was just this, I mean, I just remember crying and just like being so relieved that I could finally give him some food because he was just so unhappy. I think we were there for another 2 days after that just for observation, make sure that he was okay and that he was able to poop. And he did. He was, I think at that point, because of the Botox shot, I think he was kind of pooping kind of all the time. And so they were very happy with that. And they were like, all right, like he's, you know, after 5 days, you're good to take him home. And really, that was kind of the end of our issues until recently. We had follow-ups and he was fine. He was having no issues whatsoever. He's still kind of always was more like every other day that he would poop, instead of like every day. It was still a little bit longer timeline in between compared to his sister. But, you know, the follow-ups, the doctors were like, that's fine. As long as it's like every other day, like that's, you know, we're good with that. That's, you know, that's fine. So, you know, so at this point he is 5 and a half. So we went from, you know, 5 months old from the surgery to kind of then much more recently where he's, you know, as he got older and we got potty trained, the daily aspect of it has kind of always been an issue just in, we kind of have to force him to go sit on the potty. Like once we got to potty training, we would tell that his stomach would start to get distended and we have to go sit with you. We will come sit with you in the bathroom and sit with you while you sit on the potty and try to go. And, you know, he had a lot of resistance to that. He didn't want to do that because again, at like 3 and 4, he doesn't understand what is going on. So while it felt very normal, it didn't feel necessarily like we had this giant thing that we were dealing with all the time. We did kind of have a fairly consistent, just we need to kind of help him and coach him and get him to sit on the potty and try, because we can tell he hasn't pooped in 2 days. Like he needs to go. And he kind of tell when he needs to. So kind of now at 5, now we can tell him, okay, get your tablet or get your switch or go, you know, get something and just go sit and try. And almost every single time he will poop immediately. Like he will go right away. The second he tries, he goes. It's just the fact that we kind of have to force him to go try, instead of him. He just still doesn't recognize when he needs to. So that's kind of our daily life with it. Is it's really not all that big of a deal, other than the fact that we do have to just be very, you know, kind of conscious and pay attention to when was the, and this is a conversation my husband and I have all the time, that like, and we laugh about the fact that like half of our conversation is about pooping and, you know, when was the last time he pooped? We need to pay attention to that. Okay, it was 2 days ago. All right, we need to like have him, we need to kind of make him go sit and try.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So really just no major issues until this summer. God, I can't even think of when it was now, but it was this summer. It was October. Kind of in September, throughout the whole month, he kind of wasn't acting normal. He was complaining about his stomach hurting all the time. His stomach was really distended, but then he would poop. So it doesn't necessarily seem anything out of the normal. As far as his normal, like, he's still pooping. He's not constipated. So he's still going, but something was off, and we had a lot going on. We were in the middle of packing to move to a new house, and we just kind of kept like brushing it off, and we're like, we kind of didn't know what we didn't know. So we'd had multiple conversations about the fact that his stomach was really distended, and we were definitely worried about it, but we had all this other stuff going on, and then he would poop. So we're like, oh, he must be okay. And finally we got to a point in October, and he had a couple days in a row where he was really complaining about his stomach. And it was even like worse than that, where he had started, what really triggered us was that he had started to run a fever. All of a sudden the school had called and they said, he's running a fever and he's kind of really not acting right. And we're not quite sure, like, he's running a fever, so you got to come pick him up. And so we did. And he just was really, really lethargic and just not acting like himself. Like, we picked him up and he immediately fell asleep on the couch. And we couldn't keep him awake. Anyway, it was like all this, you know, he just was not acting like himself. There was clearly something going on. And we finally said, okay, it was the second day of him kind of acting like this and running a fever. And we're like, all right, we're going to take him to Children's because something is clearly off and wrong. And so we did, told them about his Hirschsprungs, about his surgery when he was 5 months old. And his stomach was really distended. It was really hard. And so my husband had taken him and I stayed home with our daughter, and they did x-rays and his entire intestines were ballooned up to the point where they were worried that he was, like, they were going to burst. At that point, they were saying, we think we might have to take him into surgery, like, tonight, right away, because it just, his entire intestinal tract was, like, just all ballooned up. It was really, you know, my husband called me and he said, this is, like, really bad. Like, this is the nurses and the doctors are, like, really concerned about this. They're kind of talking about the fact that, like, he might go into, like, emergency surgery and, you know, all this. And so I ended up calling a friend, she came and stayed with my daughter so I could get to the hospital as well. So while I was on my way there, they started doing the saline flush, where they were, what do they call it? Where they, you know, put the, we call it the magic water.
Yeah.
So we call it the magic water because that way it makes him feel better.
That's a way better name.
Oh, the shame.
Call it that instead.
It's the magic water. It helps. It helps him feel better. So it's magic water. So they had started doing irrigation. That's the word that they use, was the irrigations. They had started doing irrigations in the emergency room, and they were getting a lot of poop out, like a lot. I mean, it was just kind of con. They were getting a ton out, and they were like, "All right, well, we're gonna keep doing this and see if his and if the if like that swelling of his intestines starts to go down, and we can kind of figure out what's going on." So, kind of long story short, you know, they did that right away. They were like, "We're gonna admit him, and we're gonna get one of the pediatric GI doctors to come see him first thing in the morning." And so kind of throughout that night, they did the flush, the washout, and the trying to get, you know, and it just was this constant. I mean, it was so much that they were getting out, and his belly started to look a lot smaller. It started to look a lot, it was getting softer. And but he still was running a fever. They were really worried about that. So I guess the next day they did a bunch of tests, and we didn't even realize that they had done all of these, but they started doing tests, trying to figure out what was causing the fever and why he was so, because and one of the things that they had said that night in the emergency room was, they had said, "We think that he's got a blockage, that's why everything is so swollen and distended, is because we think he's got a blockage somewhere in there." But there was so much they couldn't even see on the x-ray. They couldn't even see. Like, they were like, "We can't even tell because it's just so swollen." So that was, they were like, "We need to get as much of it out as we can to figure out where the blockage is so that we can get all the, you know, get that out." And so the next day they were doing x-rays pretty regularly to kind of see where he was and like how, like what it looked like. And they got to the point where the swelling had come down enough, and they were like, "There's no blockage there. There's nothing blocking him. So we're not quite sure why he has not been able to go and why this is like, you know, as backed up as he is." And they finally started running a bunch of tests to figure out kind of what was causing all this. And they realized that he had salmonella. We have no idea. I mean, they kind of said he could have gotten it from anywhere. And the problem with Hirschsprung's is, because their intestinal tract moves so much slower than, you know, somebody without Hirschsprung's, that the salmonella basically just sat in his gut, and just the bacteria multiplied and grew a lot faster and a lot worse than it would somebody without Hirschsprung's. Because for the rest of us, we eat something, we get salmonella and probably don't even realize it. We just get a little bit of an upset stomach, and our bodies are able to flush it out, you know, quickly enough that it never becomes like a big thing. Which I didn't realize. I didn't realize that we probably get it like all the time. Maybe not all the time, but we, as adults and as somebody without Hirschsprung's, we probably get it way more than we realize. It just, our body's able to get rid of it, so it doesn't ever become a thing. Whereas for him, because of the slower speed that their, you know, bowels move at, intestines move, it became this really big thing where it was like, you know, where it was dangerous, and they couldn't get his fever down. They were doing then the irrigations like a couple times a day, which was just horrible and not fun, because at five and a half, he doesn't like them, which again, which is why we called it magic water, because that was at least a little bit, like, you know, he was a little bit better with, okay, it's the magic water. And I will say that the doctors and all of the nurses we had at Children's Phoenix were absolutely fantastic. Like, they were so, so great. And they are, especially the GI doctor, she would come in and she would sit down and talk to him and explain what she was going to do. And you know, and it really made him more, he still didn't want to do it, but it made him a little bit more comfortable where he, at least he trusted her, and he let us do it. So, you know, so those were kind of a battle every time. Doing that multiple times a day was just, you know, and as a mom, it was heartbreaking, and I hated, you know, because he would cry, and he didn't like it. And, you know, because it's not, so because we haven't had any issues with it since he was a newborn, we haven't had to do those, you know, where, you know, they had given us the whole kit, the irrigation kit and the tubes and like all of that, and had, you know, sent us home with all of that when he was little. We've never had to do it because he just hasn't had any issues. So having to do it now at five and a half, was very traumatic, and it's not something he's used to doing. So it was hard, but we got through it. And that's kind of what they said, that because it was salmonella, they had to continue to do those irrigations and rinse out as much of his intestines as they possibly could, and continue to rinse it out to help get all of that bacteria out of there. And, it worked really well. He did not have to have surgery, which is what they were, you know, we were concerned with kind of the first couple of days. They were still concerned they were going to have to do surgery. And, so we're really thankful that they didn't have to, that just the irrigation was enough, to clean everything out. So we ended up being in the hospital again that time for 5 days. And, you know, it was hard because of the salmonella, he was on, can't think of what they call it, but protocols where he wasn't allowed to leave his room. And when anybody came, when any of the nurses came in, they had to put on the full like protective gear, not like just the masks and gloves and you know, because they wanted to make sure that he didn't spread salmonella to anybody else, obviously. But it was hard because he couldn't leave his room. I mean, he was stuck in there, and he, you know, by the third day, he was feeling better. He was feeling, you know, his stomach was feeling better. He was kind of feeling, he was much more back to his normal happy self. They brought in like a video game system for him to play, and they were great. They brought him, he's a big Spider-Man fan, so they brought him like Spider-Man toys, and they had all sorts of like games that they were kind of doing in his room to keep him occupied and keep him from kind of going stir crazy. But it was still at that, you know, he started feeling better, and then he wanted to eat. Oh, and so that was the other thing with this episode, is that he wasn't really eating the probably week before we took him to the hospital. He wasn't really eating. Like, he would take a bite and be like, I'm full. Like, I don't want any. And then once we realized what was going on, we were like, oh, that makes sense why he's not eating, because there's no room in his intestine for food. So, he hadn't really eaten by the time he started to feel better. He really hadn't eaten much in about 2 weeks, and he had lost weight. Like, he was looking very, like, his face looked very skinny, and but, you know, especially where you see him every day, like, you don't necessarily notice it. It's not like this big huge shock thing, because you see him every day. But then I while we were in the hospital one point, he was sleeping, and I was just looking through old photos, and I was looking for photos from just a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, a huge difference in just, you know, he's always kind of had a little bit rounder kind of baby face. And he had lost quite a bit of weight and was super skinny. So he started feeling better and just desperately wanted to eat. Like, I mean, he was begging us for food. And the doctors were like, we need to wait to make sure that we are like totally cleared out before we introduce food in there again. And so it was finally, yeah. So they did finally clear him, and they said, okay, you can have clear fluids and, you know, like Jell-O and Gatorade and that sort of stuff. And he just, devoured it and then wanted more. And so, you know, then we got to the point where they were like, whatever the next step of foods was, but, you know, pretty simple things. And he was fine. Like he literally ate every single thing that they brought into the room. He ate all of it and was fine. Like he wasn't getting distended again. His stomach wasn't hurting. He was, you know, fine. So that was at that point, the doctor was like, all right, like probably one more day and we think he's probably good to go home. I think we've gotten all of it and he's okay. So we did. So yeah. So 5 days and you know, again, just a hospital stay with a child like that is difficult because they don't understand and you can't really explain it to them why we're having to do this and why you can't leave your room and why you can't, you know, see your sister. And that was a very difficult thing was having a twin sister. They've never been apart other than his two hospital stays, surgery and then this one. And obviously the surgery with 5 months old, like they couldn't communicate with whatever, like they didn't, no big deal then. But now, you know, it was a lot of like, I miss my sister and why can't my sister? And we did bring her up a couple times. We brought her up to come see him because she, of course, wanted to see like where he was and kind of understand what was going on. And but, you know, she couldn't spend the night. She had to, it's hard trying to then manage 2 5-year-olds in a hotel, in a hospital room where we can't leave the room and there's only so much to do. And so, you know, like her visiting was kind of short, you know, like hour and a half. And we're like, okay, but we need to take you home. And you know, so that made it kind of extra difficult just because it was life from both of them. It was why, you know, I miss my brother, I miss my sister, like why can't they be here with me? And you know, it was tough, that part of it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.com. hirschsprungs.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
For a normal story, a lot has happened, isn't it? I was thinking this would be like a 10-minute story, and there's a lot that's happened. But I think potentially one of those where you kind of, when you lay it all out, and maybe at the time we kind of think, oh, well, not a lot's happening. But actually when the hospital stay and the salmonella and you kind of lay everything out, it's actually quite a lot, isn't it?
It is. And it was definitely the, you know, It was definitely a lot. And, you know, like I said, we were kind of in the middle of moving as well. So we had all of this other stress going on. And then he gets sick and we're in the hospital. And there was a good 2 weeks there where it was just like kind of losing my mind, like stress and like anxiety levels just through the roof, because it was like every kind of minute was like, what's going to happen now? And, but at the same time, you know, by the time he started getting better and, you know, we kind of got through it and got him home, we kind of looked at it and went, you know, we're so glad we took him when we did, and that it didn't get to the point that his bowel rupture, because obviously that would have been like cataclysmic. I mean, so much worse. So we're really glad that we took him to the hospital when we did, and they were able to kind of figure out what was going on fairly quickly and start getting him some relief. But, you know, when we look back at, you know, over five years, we've had, you know, two major things, the surgery and then the salmonella. So I guess I feel like it really is not, it's not that much compared to the amount of time that we've had where he's been healthy and fine. And, you know, where we're not having major issues with it, and we're not having to do the magic water all the time. And, you know, now at this point we tell him to go sit on the potty. And, oh, and they did do, they did the Botox shot again while we were in the hospital. And they kind of said that they think we need to start doing it regularly. So, you know, every whatever, six months or so. I think we already have our appointment scheduled for the next follow-up with them to kind of determine if we need to do it again. But they did say that at this point, like we do need to, because we weren't doing that regularly. We hadn't done it since the surgery, because he was fine. We didn't feel like there was a reason to do it. And, but now after this episode, the GI specialists were like, yeah, like we need to start doing it regularly. They've put him in the, they do have a Hirschsprung's group at Children's, what is the word I'm looking for, where they follow them throughout their life to kind of watch what happens and essentially research. So they've put him into that to kind of keep track of his progress and how he's doing and all of that. So and again, this Children's has just been absolutely fantastic. They did such a great job with his, we actually ended up for his surgery when he was 5 months old, we were in Cincinnati, Ohio. And we kind of are thankful we were there when we had to do the surgery, because we found out that kind of one of the number one doctors, the surgeons, is, and I totally can't remember a name, but I can't even remember. I think it's a woman. Can't even remember for sure, but anyway, I think it was a woman. That she's like one of the top Hirschsprung's like surgeons in the country. And we were very fortunate, because we probably would have ended up being sent there anyways, and we just happened to have been living there at the time. So we kind of say it was I think we were meant to be there because we were meant to be living there at the time, because we were able, because it is so rare, and you know, you don't have a ton of doctors that do this regularly, and we ended up having access to a doctor who does this regularly and deals with Hirschsprungs all the time. So we were really fortunate that that for the surgery that was the case. But then now that we're in Phoenix, yeah, Children's Phoenix has just been amazing, and I think our journey forward, if we start doing the Botox shots regularly, and just kind of keeping, I think now after the Salmonella episode, I think we are kind of hyper aware of, even we were aware of his kind of normal pooping schedule and kind of like what he's eating and all that kind of stuff before. But I think now after this, like we are just hyper aware of, you know, if, because even just the other day, my husband was like, oh, I think his stomach looks a little distended. And then we, you know, felt his stomach. We're like, no, it's fine. But I think it was so traumatic, the whole, you know, Salmonella, that I think we're just paying very close attention to like every little thing with him. And, you know, is he pooping every day or at least every other day? And, you know, making sure that he's eating, you know, things like yogurt and getting some of that, the good, you know, probiotics and that sort of stuff, to make sure that we don't go through that again. I mean, now if he gets Salmonella, there's not much you can do, like it happens, but catching it earlier on, I think is kind of, we're much more, aware of that. And kind of one of the things that they did tell us is that, you know, kind of anytime, he gets sick, running a fever, kind of any kind of illness, whether it's even just like a cold or anything, can slow down their intestinal tract even more than it already is, and then can cause additional problems. So even something as simple as a cold can kind of set off an episode of, you know, having an issue. So that was good. Like we didn't realize that. And because again, it hasn't happened in the past.
Why would you know
yeah.
that, you know, it's like you said before, you don't know what you don't know. And I think sometimes, and I know, you know, especially people around my age who maybe don't have Hirschsprung's issues or think about it too much, maybe, I don't know if complacent's the right word, but like you kind of think, oh, well, everything's been fine for a number of years, and, you know, and you and then something happens and it sort of snaps everything back into sort of, oh, wait, yes, he does.
Oh, there is a thing that we have to pay attention to. Yeah, that's exactly it is. So it was kind of this false sense of security because he's been fine and we haven't had any issues. And then all of a sudden it's this issue and it's a big issue and it's, you know, like becomes this big, big thing that we were not prepared for, or didn't expect it to become as big of a thing as it was. So now I think we watch him very carefully, and you know, kind of like I said before, he's gotten to the age where now where it's really easy to say, okay, it's time to go, you know, you need to grab your tablet and go sit on the potty and try. And he doesn't fight us like he does, and then he poops immediately and he's fine. So kind of, you know, like managing, helping support him and managing, like we just have to be very aware. Okay, he pooped 2 days ago after dinner today, after dinner this evening, he's got to go sit and try. Like we've got to make him. So it's just kind of us just paying attention to those things and making sure that we're doing those things you know, will prevent us having another major episode, because nobody wants to go through that. It's not fun.
No, but thank you so much for sharing this. I mean, I know we said, you know, that there's quite a lot to Hirschsprungs, even though maybe it doesn't seem so much at the time. There's still, I mean, to this story, there's still, I know you said you sort of had, you know, one hospital stay and obviously initially born with Hirschsprungs, diagnosed after 3 or 4 months. But still an awful lot has happened in his sort of five and a bit years of life, which is amazing. But no, thank you so much for sharing Leo's story. And I know you said a little bit about what your sort of hopes are for the future. or for Leo's future. I don't know if you wanted to sort of expand on that a little bit.
I think my hope for him is that as he continues to get older, he kind of learns a little bit more. And I don't expect it to happen for, you know, a couple more years, but that he kind of learns a little bit more about understanding his body and being kind of more aware. And he is aware that there is something kind of different with him than his sister. And, you know, like we'll have conversations every once in a while, like where his sister will go, well, it's because, you know, Leo's stomach gets up, or Leo's, I can't even think of what she says, but she'll say something about Leo's stomach. And, you know, so he'll say, yeah, it's like, there's something wrong with my tummy. And we're like, oh, there's not really something wrong. I mean, kind of, but you know, like how do you explain that to a 5-year-old so that he understands? So I kind of think my goal and my hopes for him are just as he gets older, that he kind of learns and we can teach him how to kind of manage this thing and how to be aware of if something is off with his stomach, that, you know, if he's got an upset stomach, if his sister has an upset stomach, like it's not that big of a deal. But if he's got an upset stomach or his stomach really hurts, like that he needs to be able to say something and make sure he's telling us, and just that he can recognize as he gets older, recognize those kinds of things that might be a concern that we should kind of pay attention to and go, is this something, or is it just, you know, he ate something that upset his stomach. So that's my, you know, I mean, I like I said, we've got a follow-up. He had the Botox shot in October. So I think we've got our follow-up in the spring at some point to kind of decide if we're going to do it again, like when we're going to do it again. So that's a little, you know, that's a little, I guess it gives me a little bit of anxiety just, you know, thinking about this, like having to do these Botox shots regularly and kind of keep up with that. Because again, he still doesn't recognize, he doesn't feel it when he needs to poop. We have to prompt him to go do it, and he will, but we still have to prompt him. So I really hope that he can get to the point where he either learns to recognize it better, or that he kind of just knows, I need to go poop because I haven't pooped in 2 days. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure that will come as he gets older and we get, you know, to older, more understanding and all that. I'm sure he'll get to that point. Just, you know, we're not there yet because he's 5, and that's, you know,
just the way it is. But thank you so much for coming on. I wish you, Leo, and your whole family all the very, very best for the future, and no hospital stays anymore.
Yes, thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me. It's been great to be able to kind of talk about this and tell his story. Hopefully it helps some other people know what they potentially have to look forward to in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.